Good evening.
I would recommend, if you don't have a Bible, to see if you can find one in the pew in front of you, because tonight we're going to be doing a lot of reading. So please pick one up. Growing up, Sunday nights were always a special thing in my family. After church Sunday evening, we'd go home, and while my parents were in the kitchen cooking, we would go in the living room, my brothers and my sister, and we would usually watch television. We'd watch a movie. Lots of times it was the Disney. You guys remember that? The Disney always had their show on after church Sunday night growing up. Well, one time, I don't know if it's the Disney, but one time I remember there was a horror movie playing. And I've always told you guys I'm a coward. And this is just going to reinforce that in your mind. There was a horror movie on television. My brother started watching this horror movie. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because we're going to pretty much be studying what looks like a horror movie. But let me go ahead and finish my story first. And so I was watching this horror movie in the living room, and it was getting pretty scary. It was getting pretty hairy. And so I realized the scary scene was about to come up, so I stood and moved in the doorway so that when the really bad stuff happened, I could run into the kitchen. So there I was, waiting for the Wizard of Oz to yell "Cowardly Lion." And when he did, I ran into the kitchen, just like the cowardly. True story. It used to make me cry. I was so afraid of the Wizard of Oz. Anyways, that's not probably a horror movie in most of your minds, but it was in mine. It scared me to death. If you have your Bibles, please turn to Mark chapter 5. We're continuing a lesson, as Don Michael said this morning, a series of lessons from the book of Mark. Don Rule said, if you guys can preach on Mark while I'm gone, I'd appreciate it. So I picked my favorite lesson, or one of my favorite lessons out of Mark, is Mark chapter 5. If you looked at the sermon topic, I believe it was a herd of pigs, a demon, and God. Maybe this rings a bell on you. Maybe you already know the story. If not, hopefully you'll get something out of this evening. Before we begin in verse 1, what's happened in chapter 4 kind of sets the tone here. In chapter 4, Jesus was on one side of the Sea of Galilee. He'd been teaching and ministering, and he was now exhausted. So him and some disciples and some other people as well get into a number of boats and start sailing back across the sea to the other side. And while they're on the sea, traveling, Jesus falls asleep. A great storm arises. So the storm is so great, the disciples think that they're going to die. So they wake up Jesus and say, "Jesus, wake up, you know, we're going to die." And they're all in panic. And Jesus just walks out onto the deck of the boat and just says, "Peace, be still." And all of a sudden the storm was as calm as glass. And it says, look at the last verse of chapter 4. "And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, 'Who then is this, that even wind and sea obey him?'" This sets the tone for the next chapter. Let's begin in verse 1, chapter 1, chapter 5, verse 1. "They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit." Let's stop for a minute. I want to paint the picture in your mind of this man. He is a scary man. He is a man that, like I said, he comes right out of a horror film. Let's read verses 3 through 5, and let's see how they describe him here. "He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains. But he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and bruising himself with stones." Okay, so first of all, this man is possessed with demons. That's got to be scary in and of itself right there. That's a scary thing. I've never met somebody possessed with demons, but I've seen it on movies, and it's scary. So here's a man possessed with demons. And it says that his dwelling place, most people live in homes, houses. If you're really poor, maybe a tent. This man lived, look what it says, his dwelling, in verse 5, was among the tombs and on the mountains. This man hung out where the graves were. That's scary. What else does it say about this man? He says that, verse 5, it says he was always, night and day, crying out. Now, just stop for a minute before we even look at this man even further. Can you imagine? You're on the boat. You've had a rough day on the boat. Great storm almost took your life. Then all of a sudden, the storm is perfectly calm because somebody says, "Peace, be still." So you're sitting there back and you're contemplating all this. You're wondering, what in the world? Who is this man? Even though you've been with him for some time, he is still amazing you. And now all of a sudden, you come to the other side, and up comes a man. It doesn't say that he just walks up to you calmly. It says he runs up to the ship. And here, the disciples, I don't know about you, but if I'm a disciple and I see a man possessed with demons who is crying out all the time, I mean, maybe you can even hear him crying out, "Ah!" as you're pulling up to shore. This probably gets your attention. And you probably start watching this guy, and he's running to the ship. And you're going, is that where we're going to dock? Let's dock somewhere else. Let's find someplace else. And Jesus says, no, we're going to dock there. So this man is possessed with demons. He lives in the tomb. It says night and day, he's in the tomb crying out. And he has stones in his hands, and he cuts himself. He bruises himself with stones. So he's running around. And this is something you're not going to get from the book of Mark. But in the book of Luke, in chapter 8, verse 27, it says, for a long time he had worn no clothes, and he had not lived in a house, but among the tombs. So he's naked. So not only is he crying out, living in the tombs, demon-possessed, he's bruised and cut, and he's running to your boat, and he's naked. Are you ready to turn the boat around yet? In Matthew chapter 8, it even adds a little more. Matthew chapter 8 reads this, verse 28. And when he came to the other side, to the country of the Gadarenes, two demon-possessed men met him, coming out of the tombs, so fierce that no one could pass by. Now, Mark only focuses on one, because the one Mark focuses on is the worst of the two. But there was, he wasn't even by himself. He had a friend with him. Now, let's paint the whole picture. He's possessed. He lives in the tomb. He cries out all the time. He cuts himself. He's naked. And he has a dangerous friend with him. Is this a place you want to dock your ship? I'm ready to turn around and go. Can you imagine? Look at verse 4 one more time. For he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. When I was young, we had a dog named Hector. And this dog was crazy. He was a big, full-blooded German Shepherd, and he was one of the strongest dogs that I'd ever seen. And we used to chain him up because he's like my son. He just could not be tamed. And we would chain this dog up. And we would have to use a big, heavy chain. And still, he would frequently break this chain. And more so, he would do it when some of our neighbor kids would kind of tempt him to try to run across this chain area to really get his goat. But I mean, this dog was powerful. He would just snap those chains. We would always have to have spare chains to chain him up again. It says here in verse 4 that this man was always having to be chained, always having to be bound. Can you imagine being on the crew that gets this call in the middle of the night? Hey, crazy man's broken free again. Bring your friend and some chains. We're going to go and we're going to shackle him and chain him down. Can you imagine being on that crew? What's happening in the minds of the city folk when this call comes in? Obviously, they have phone calls, so I don't know what I'm doing. Okay. But obviously, this was a bad man. This was a bad man, demon-possessed man, strong, scary man. Let's pick up again in verse 1. I want to see this whole story as it unfolds. They came to the other side of the sea, the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. So the man was there immediately. Look at this welcoming party. He was there immediately. And verse 6 says, pick up there. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. So it would seem that this demon-possessed man actually saw Jesus while he was still in the boat from a far distance. And so when he sees the boat coming, there must have been something, first of all, that got his attention. Perhaps this man was up on top of the mountain and he saw the storm arising, and this demon-possessed man, he probably liked bad stuff to happen. Maybe he saw this boat out there and the boat's being thrown around. Maybe he starts to secretly enjoy this, or maybe not so secretly. Maybe he's happy this is happening. But then all of a sudden, the sea is dead calm. Maybe now his attention gets a little greater onto that boat that's just out there. Maybe, and for whatever reason, this demon-possessed man recognized Jesus, and he wants to come and greet him. Man, I'm wouldn't have wanted to be one of the disciples. So here Jesus is. He's coming in from far distance. The demon-possessed man recognizes Jesus. Let's look again at verse 6. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran to meet him. Just imagine again the whole picture in your mind. Imagine again this man running to your boat. It must have been a terrifying ordeal for the disciples. But let's continue. Let's look at how Jesus responds to this. Verse 6, and he ran and fell down before him. He runs to Jesus, and immediately when he comes within close contact with him, he falls down in front of Jesus. Other people had to steer clear of this man. He was a man that Matthew says was so fierce no one could pass by. So normally when he's running at somebody, he's running at them to do harm. But in this case, he runs to Jesus, and he falls down before him. Now, obviously, he's not worshiping God in the sense that we worship God. We worship God because we love him, and we want to obey him. But in the book of James, chapter 2, and verse 19, it says, the devils believe and tremble. So this demon-possessed man runs and he falls down at the feet of Jesus because he is terrified of what he has just seen and who he is seeing. So he falls down before him on the ground. Notice how he receives Jesus in verse 7. Jesus, Son of the Most High God. He recognizes Jesus, doesn't he? He says, you are the Son of the Most High God. So he recognizes Jesus as God. Look again at verse 7, the whole verse. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, what have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me. Man, this demon really sheds a lot of light on who Jesus is, doesn't he? First of all, he recognizes him as God. And then he recognizes two things. First of all, he recognizes that Jesus has the authority on earth to do what he wants with the demons. He says in verse 7 again, I adjure you by the living God, do not torment me. He already knows that Christ is going to win. He knows that right now Christ has power over him. But that's not even it. He knows that Christ has absolute power over him as well. But I want to read to you from Matthew chapter 8, verse 29. Matthew 8, 29 reads, and behold, Matthew tells about there being two. They cried out, what have you to do with us, O Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time? The demons recognized that there was a time appointed for them. They recognized, first of all, that he had the power now to do what he wants. But they also recognized that in the end, when judgment time comes, there's going to be a time of reckoning. The demons even recognized this. Why did he come to torment us? And they obviously were in great fear because they fell before him, and they're begging Jesus to not torment him. Let's pick up again in verse 8. Hang on one second. Verse 8. For he was saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. And Jesus asked him, what is your name? He replied, my name is Legion, for we are many. And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, send us to the pigs, let us enter them. So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirit came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. It seems like in verse 8 what's happening is that while Christ was speaking, the demons interrupted, because it says, for he was saying. While he was still speaking, the demons interrupt him, and perhaps they interrupt him at this point to beg him to be merciful. It says, while he was speaking to them, they interrupt him. That seems to be what's happening here. Look again at verse 8. For he was saying to them, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. And then Jesus asks the question. First he gives a command, come out. And then he asks the question, and perhaps he asks the question. Perhaps he gives the command and then asks the question, maybe he's already kicked one demon out of this man. Maybe he says, come out of this man, you demons. Maybe a demon's come out, and the man is still possessed, and he says, what's going on here? But I don't think that's what happens. I think Christ knows what's happening. I think more than likely, Christ says, come out of that man. But he wants to demonstrate to his disciple just how bad the situation is. I think he wants to demonstrate to his disciple just how bad this demon-possessed man is. So he asked him his name. Look again in verse 8. He was saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. And Jesus asked him in verse 9, what is your name? Look at his name. He replied, my name is Legion, for we are many. The Legion was a military term. The Romans used it. And at the time of Christ, it meant around 6,000 to 8,000 military men. Now, it doesn't necessarily imply that there are that exact number of demons. What he is simply saying is, there's a lot of us in this man. This man didn't have just one demon possession. He had multiple demon possessions. Perhaps as many as 2,000, but as we're going to read in a minute, we're going to see there was 2,000 pigs who became possessed. Maybe there was as many as 2,000 demons living within this man. He said, my name is Legion, for we are many. Notice here that the demon again is begging him. My name is Legion, for we are many. And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Again, the demon recognizes Christ's authority. And isn't it amazing that the demons are even going to ask God for mercy? That kind of grabbed for me is odd, because they intentionally went against God. But now they recognize and see that their end is coming. Now they recognize this and they are begging for mercy. Let's pick up again in verse 11. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." Matthew chapter 8, verse 43, listen to this verse. This is how this verse reads. When the unclean spirit has gone out of a person, it passes through the waterless places, seeking rest, but finds none. So Matthew seems to say through the word of, through Jesus' teaching, that when a demon is removed from a man, if he has nowhere to go, he kind of just wanders around looking for a place to live. And if he finds none, he is without rest. Again, listen one more time to Matthew 12:43. When the unclean spirit has gone out of a person, it passes through waterless places, seeking rest, but finds none. I think this demon-possessed man, the demons in him, recognized this. They didn't want to be homeless, but they knew this was a restless state. So again, they begged him to be merciful. Now look at verse 13 one more time. So he gave them permission. Isn't that a powerful verse? Jesus gave this demon-possessed man, multiple demons, permission. First of all, they asked him, and then he granted it. They recognized that it was only through his permission they were going to be able to do this. They recognized he had the authority. He had the power. They recognized that he was in control of the situation. At what point, if you're a disciple, do you start feeling a little better? Because at the first, again, you have to be backed up at the edge of the boat. You have to be on the other side of the boat while this is all happening. But maybe as this is happening, maybe when Jesus says, "What's your name?" Or maybe even before that, maybe when the demon-possessed man comes and falls down before him and says, "Son of God, do not torment." At some point, the disciples start to maybe come a little closer. They want to be a part of it. They want to see what's happening. And now maybe they're learning a lesson that maybe the water didn't teach them. Maybe the calming of the sea didn't teach them this. But it's a lesson that he is still trying to teach them. God is in control. I calmed the sea, and now I'm going to heal a demon-possessed man. Let's pick up again in verse 14. Now let's go back again to verse 13. Mark 5:13. So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. I've told you guys before, we used to raise pigs. And there were times where we used to try to ride our pigs. And pigs are not an easy animal to ride. I mean, they don't have a good back for riding. It's kind of hunched over, and you kind of have a tendency to slide off of it. And it's not really easy to ride those things. And plus, they're just kind of crazy. Also, when our pigs would get too heavy, we had to run them because we had to make market weight, which was 250 pounds. And our pigs would start getting too heavy. So we'd take them in our orchard. We'd have a cane. We would try to kind of steer them with the cane. You know, we'd hit them on the head and then hit them on the bottom and kind of steer them. And we try to run these animals. And these animals, let me just tell you from experience, pigs are hard to control. These demons found this out. These demons jumped into these pigs. Maybe they were thinking, it probably drives like a man. And they get in, and this has four legs. I don't know what to do here. Four legs, I don't know how to control it. Whatever the case, these demon-possessed pigs runs off the sea, runs off the cliff into the water. Now perhaps the demons had an ulterior motive. Maybe the demons thought, if we destroy these pigs, we'll put Christ off on a bad foot. We'll set things off on a bad tone for him. He'll have to explain the destruction of the pigs. Whatever the case, the pigs are destroyed. Let's pick up in verse 14. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pig. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was sitting in the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but he said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. The people here, it says in verse 14, the people came out to see what had happened. Somebody owned those 2,000 pigs. Somebody probably wanted to have an answer. Why are my 2,000 pigs destroyed? The whole city comes out to see what's happening. And when they come out, look again in verse 15. And they came to see Jesus. They wanted to see who was responsible for the destruction of their money. And look at what they see. And they saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were terrified. And those that had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. A lunatic is now sitting and clothed and in his right mind. And this kind of power terrified the city folk. Isn't it interesting? They would rather have a demon-possessed man in outside of their city than having God in their city. So they asked him to leave. Maybe they thought Christ was coming to punish them. Maybe they were afraid. For whatever reason, they asked him to leave. Please get out of the region. Let's look again at verse 15. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind. Luke chapter 8, verse 35 says he was sitting at the feet of Jesus. This means that he was sitting there because he wants to learn from Christ. There was a position where a man would be in a position of learning, sitting at the feet of somebody. So he was sitting at the feet of Christ, wanting to learn. And they didn't want any part of this. The city folk wanted to stop. In verse 17 again, and they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. Luke chapter 8, verse 37 reads, then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasene asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. If you don't want God in your life, he's not going to be in your life. They wanted Jesus gone, but he said, you want me here? I'll leave. I'm not going to make a big fuss. I'm not going to make a big stink. I'm not going to tell you what I can do for you. I'll leave. And he quietly leaves. If we don't want God in our life, he will leave. So it's really up to us if we want him in our life. There were two responses that actually happened here. The city folks, it says, they were terrified. Again, Luke 8:37 says, they were seized with great fear. So some of the folks, most of the folks, were terrified of what had happened. But a different response happened in the man who was possessed. Look again at this man. Look again at this man in verse 18. And as he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. Look at what this demon-possessed, now healed man does. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. The Decapolis was an area of 10 cities. This man didn't just go to one city and tell one person. He was going to the whole area of the Decapolis, telling anybody who would listen to him. And you have to think that everybody knew who this man was. It says that he would let no one pass by. You have to chain him up. He was a terror. He would sit in the tombs and cry out all night. They knew who he was. And now they come, and he's in his right mind, and they're terrified. But this man wants to do something. He wants to be a part of the life that he's just healed of. And Jesus tells him, go and tell your friends and your family what a great thing God has done for you. And he's obedient to them. He had been healed from a horrible disease. He had had something wonderful done for him. And he had to share it with people. He could not hold it in. His salvation had to be on his lips. I want to read to you a story that I shared with young people on Tuesday night. And for those of you who don't come to Tuesday night devotional, you'll see what you're missing. Of course, you're getting it now, so don't come. No, I'm kidding. Come anyway. It's a story I got, and it's about a man who was an officer in the Salvation Army. When Salvation Army Officer Shaw saw the three men before him, tears sprang to his eyes. Shaw was a medical missionary who had just arrived in India. He had been assigned to a leper colony that the Salvation Army was taking over. The three men before him had manacles and fetters binding their hands and feet. Their bonds were painfully cutting into their diseased flesh. Captain Shaw turned to the guard and said, please unfasten their chains. It isn't safe. These men are dangerous criminals as well as lepers, the guard exclaimed. I'll be responsible. They are suffering enough, Captain Shaw replied. He then reached out, took the keys, knelt, tenderly removed the shackles from the men, and treated their bleeding ankles and wrists. About 2 weeks later, Shaw had to return. Shaw had to make an overnight trip. He dreaded leaving his wife and children alone. The word of the guard came back to him, and he was concerned about the safety of his family. When Shah's wife went to the front door the morning she was alone, she was startled to open the door and see the three criminals lying on her steps. One of them exclaimed, "We know the doctor, go. We stay here all night, but no harm can come to you." Even dangerous men are capable of great things when we show them love. This was a dangerous man, but Christ reached out to him and showed him compassion, showed mercy on him. And because of that, great things happened in the capitalist. Because of this man, everybody marveled at the work of God. Our God's the same today. He courageously walks into our lives when there's hard, when we're battling hardships. He lovingly and mercifully touches and heals our broken lives. We also ought to have salvation on our lips. I want to close reading to you one passage from Psalm 66. If you have your Bible, you'll want to turn there and read along with me. Psalm 66. Before we read this, I want to point out one other thing that I wanted to point out, and I want to go back for a second and point this out. I failed to do so. There were three things asked of Christ in the story we just read. The first request was made by the demon-possessed man, that he would be merciful to him and let him go into the pig. The second request was made by the city folk, that he would leave the city, the area. The third one was made by the demon-possessed man when he said, "Let me go with you." He answered the demon-possessed man by letting them go into the pigs. He answered the city by leaving, but he did not answer the request of the one man who wanted to do God's bidding. Isn't it amazing? Sometimes we need to remember that God has plans for us that may go against our requests, but we need to make the most of even our failed requests. I want to end again with the idea that we need to have salvation on our lips. We need to be telling people about what God has done for us. I want to read Psalm 66, beginning in verse 1. "Shout for joy to God, all the earth. Sing the glory of His name. Give to Him glorious praise. Say to God, how awesome are your deeds. So great is your power that your enemies come cringing to you. All the earth worships and you. All the earth worships you and sings praises to you. They sing praises to your name. Come and see what God has done. He is awesome in His deeds toward the children of man." Verse 16. "Come and hear, all you who fear God, and I will tell you what He has done for my soul. I cried to Him with my mouth, and high praises was on my tongue. If I had cherished iniquity in my heart, the Lord would not have listened. But truly God has listened. He has attended to the voice of my prayer. Blessed be God, because He has not rejected my prayer or removed His steadfast love from me." We need to have the fact that God has saved us on our lips. We need to be like the demon-possessed man who went about proclaiming it everywhere. Not just in one city, not just to one person, but he went to an area of 10 cities, sharing with them what God has done for them. We need to be like this man. We need to learn from this story. We need to realize that God has compassion on us today, just like He did then. We need to learn that we also ought to be sharing this message. There's some here tonight that have some needs that we can be of assistance with. Some here tonight that have not been immersed into Christ. If there's anything that we can help at all, please come as you sing a song that's been selected.